On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, 1150 AM here in the Seattle area, on Transformation Talk Radio around the world, and on the various stations. I think it's up to 90 where it gets syndicated at one point or another, and after the fact on ChristineUpchurch.com. I tell you, whenever and wherever you're listening from today, you're going to be so glad you joined us, because I'm excited about today's guest. We have been trying to get her on the show for, I think, about 2 years now, maybe longer. But before I tell you who that is, I want to say hello to the magician behind all the electronics over there, Mr. Benny Mathers. Hello, Benny.
Hi, doing very well. And for, yes, my next trick, I will be... No, there's no tricks today.
Yeah,
It's all real.
Yes, I know it's real. And I think most magic is. In fact, the magic of healing, mm-hmm. as we think of it, mm-hmm. Is actually quite real as well. We've got a lot of scientific evidence. I've actually been a subject of a bunch of scientific experiments relating to that. So, yes, it's just a different kind of technology that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And just like your show and many others here, we all are about healing, and we try to offer it back to all of our listeners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been trying to get this particular guest on, as I said before, for a couple of years. She is doing really important work, and we need what she's doing more today than ever before. The person I'm talking about is Mary Gordon. She is recognized internationally as an award-winning social entrepreneur, an educator, an author, a child advocate, and a parenting expert. And she's created programs that are fueled by the power of empathy. In 1996, she outlined the initial curriculum of Roots of Empathy, which she's going to tell us all about. It was a piloted program in Toronto. And then she established an international association and eventually went from Roots of Empathy to Seeds of Empathy. And she's reached 500,000 children to date. And it is internationally recognized. Let's see, George Lucas, his foundation, Edutopia, says it's one of the top evidence-based social and emotional learning programs by his association there. And she's got a book out that is beautiful. It's called Roots of Empathy, Changing the World Child by Child. I'd like to introduce our guest today, Mary Gordon. Mary, welcome.
Hello, Christine. Good to be with you, and I'm sorry it took so long.
That's okay. You know, it's funny because I do believe in divine timing, and I find it so fascinating that we're at a stage now here down in the United States. I know you live up in Canada, but here in the United States, we are at this stage where we have continual gun violence. And yes, there is something very significant going on in terms of, you know, people having access to these horrific guns, don't get me wrong, but something goes wrong with a person along the way to have them end up, you know, wanting to go into school and shoot friends or shooting people in a, you know, at an outdoor concert. And it seems to me that your program is getting to the root of that sort of thing. Can you first share with our listeners how you were eventually sort of internally guided to provide this program to the world?
Yes. Well, Christine, I was noticing that in my earlier work around violence and aggression and bullying, that the common thread in all that suffering was the absence of empathy in the perpetrator.
Uh-huh.
And so then my next question to myself was, well, where do you get this empathy? How can we intervene? How can we get mega doses of empathy to break this cycle of violence?
Uh-huh.
And I realized from my work with families with new babies and in my earlier social enterprise that it's in the relationship between the baby and the parents in the earliest months and year,
mm-hmm.
that empathy either flourishes or fades. I believe we're all predisposed to empathy. but it's how the baby is responded to and loved and cared for mm-hmm. in so, that first year that builds empathy.
So, Mary, you know, I know that we use this word freely in our world, but can you just share with our listeners your definition of empathy?
Yeah, my definition of empathy is understanding how other people feel mm-hmm. and feeling with them. And very often you will hear the term cognitive empathy, and that's not my definition. That's half of my definition, because cognitive empathy means the ability to take the perspective of another person, and that's certainly crucial.
Uh-huh.
But without emotional empathy, the ability to feel with another person, you don't have a whole human being, and you don't have the essence of our humanity, which is our capacity to feel,
That's such an important point there, Mary, because it's not just about this rational-based choice of right versus wrong, or being able to sort of imagine and making some choices based on that. It's really based on more of what we consider to be something from the heart.
Yes, it's from the heart and from the mind. And, you know, to be a full human being, obviously you have to be able to think. But without combining the ability to feel, we can have very icy decisions made. Mm-hmm. And we can really hive off all of the things that we have come to collectively in human history believe are essential components of living collectively and peacefully in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do like to emphasize the distinction between cognitive empathy and our definition of whole empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so if this is something that is developed between parent and child, does it make sense to be creating some sort of education or intervention, if need be, early on?
Yes, the thing is, empathy happens very naturally if the parent has the experience of being parented themselves in a way that allows the baby to feel felt, allows the baby to feel that they're understood and trust that their needs will be met.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of us have landed lucky with that kind of parenting. So your question is, what about the parents who didn't experience in that and through no fault of their own do not know how to parent empathically? There certainly does need to be some sort of support for those parents. And that's what my first social innovation was, providing support to very early parenting, but in a very natural, neighborhood, playful, non-instructional, but supportive way.
Uh-huh.
Because it's not the sort of thing you need an instruction to know how to love your baby in a way that the baby knows they feel loved.
Uh-huh.
It's about seeing it modeled. It's about having conversations and being respected. So the interventions that are required need to be sensitive and need to be respectful.
Right.
The fact that you're dealing with an adult who may be completely intelligent but completely having missed the idea of how to respond to a child's emotional state,
uh-huh.
to be able to attune to that, and that's the problem many parents have. And that's why we intervene with children in their classroom to allow them to see over a whole school year what love looks like.
Uh-huh.
There's no one right way to love, and there's no one right way to be a parent, but by golly, don't you know when you're in the presence of love?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so let's say that a child, you know, when they were a baby, doesn't get that kind of that nurturing, that kind of empathetic connection from the parent, is all lost?
No, all is not lost, but you can appreciate that if a child is a baby, their emotional needs are never understood and are not met. The child doesn't understand their own feelings.
Oh, yes.
So the child will basically be able to feel happy and angry and maybe sad, but not really understand or be able to articulate their feelings to themselves and certainly not to others. And they will not have the capacity to be able to read the emotional cues of the others because nobody read their emotional cues.
Right.
So all is not lost, because I always say empathy can't be taught by formal instruction. So although it can't be taught, it can be caught experientially. Mm-hmm. That if you allow children, and obviously in every classroom there will be some children who didn't have a wonderful early attachment relationship,
right,
that if those little children are guided in observing what's going on with the little baby and how the parent is responding to the baby's different moods, like when the baby's frustrated or the baby's very excited, these children have the opportunity then, through the guiding, through the curriculum of Roots of Empathy, to reflect on a time when they have felt like the baby, to be able to explore and listen to how other kids have felt like that too.
Right.
So even though, as babies, many little children did not have that experience, it's never too late to get it. But they basically, you can teach emotional literacy, which we do.
Uh-huh.
You can teach reading cues, and you can teach perspective taking, which we do.
Right.
And they're the two components of empathy. But it's like you can serve a beautiful meal, but the person has to be able to eat it in order to get the nutrition.
Right.
So it's like you can do all this, but the child is the one who makes the decision and puts it all together to be empathic.
Yeah, and this makes such perfect sense to me, and I'm so inspired by the results of your program. We have to go to a quick break, but when we return, more about this program and some of the transformative things you've seen with children who, you know, had that sort of disconnection and suddenly changed their lives after this program. More with Mary Gordon here in just a few moments. Stay tuned. Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
Let It Go Radio. The future awaits you. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Barbara Scheidegger explores the way to clarity, peace, and how to live a successful life on your terms by turning negative experiences into positive ones. Barbara's curiosity about the human experience drives her both personally and professionally. As a life coach, author, and renowned clinical hypnotherapist, Barbara knows how to move forward in a natural, organic way without side effects. If you want to grow, be sure to tune in to Let It Go Radio. To learn more, visit letitgohypnosis.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Mary, you were talking about the importance of helping children to not only develop empathy for others, but to understand their own feelings as an important, you know, piece of that puzzle of connection between humans. What grades do you typically bring this into in schools?
Well, we have curriculum written for kindergarten. Uh-huh. And then there's a different curriculum from grade 1 to 3 and another curriculum for grades 4 to 6. In some countries, they use our 7 and 8 curriculum. We don't so much use it in the United States because in middle school, the children tend to have multiple teachers and move around a little bit.
Right, yes.
And we typically, in Seattle there, we typically offer the program in primary or 4 to 6. And the reason is we so value the classroom teacher and the climate that teacher sets with the children that that really is the community of the children. And to be able to build solidarity and emotional security in that classroom allows all the children to thrive, to connect to themselves and to connect to one another, which advances their overall learning. So quite honestly, their academic learning is not our key goal, although I appreciate it is in
right.
school, but there's a link there.
So what does the program look like?
Well, the program, unlike other social-emotional learning programs, lasts an entire year. And the other phrase that's used to describe Roots of Empathy is that it's an experiential program, meaning it's like a field trip, that there's real baby and parents from the community come into the program over the course of the school year. The little baby is about 2 to 4 months of age when we start the program in the fall. And that family visits 9 times throughout the school year. So the children chronicle not just the baby's physical milestones, which they have a lot of fun with, but also the baby's emotional milestones and the developing attachment relationship between the baby and the parent. So the week before this family comes, we've got a an award-winning curriculum. There is a class visit from the Roots of Empathy certified instructor, and they work with the children on a theme. And then, supposing the theme is crying, they talk and they have exercises in that week before the family visit, which is really the heart of the program when the baby comes. And then the baby comes, and if the theme was crying, there's a lot of interrogation, actually, from the children to the parent. When does the baby cry? How do you calm the baby down? Does the baby cry a little bit or a lot? In other words, looking at the intensity, the emotional intensity of the baby.
Right.
And everything that happens on that green blanket that we roll out when the baby comes and the children sit around the green blanket. And there you have the one parent, sometimes two, and the instructor. Everything that happens on that green blanket is orchestrated so that the experience can be flipped back to the children on the week after when you have a reflective class visit on that theme. And everything that was discussed in the family visit is kind of revisited through other activities. And, you know, I'm an old school mom, so I'm completely respectful of the preciousness of being in a classroom during instructional time. So teachers love Roots of Empathy because in our 27 classroom visits over the school year, we are building the emotional literacy of the children and building their perspective-taking capacities. And it just grows every single month. You see changes in the children. So, and at the end of the year, we have a wonderful baby celebration. And in Seattle, you do a spectacular job of bringing all the families together and celebrating the gift of that precious first year of life which parents share.
Uh-huh.
And all the volunteer instructors, this is a program that doesn't just come to the classroom. It comes to the community.
Mm. That sounds amazing. And one of the things that I'm hearing you say is that with the family visits, when the baby is present and the children are watching the mother or the parents interacting with the baby, they are getting some of the mirroring, like basically having sort of the good empathetic parenting mirrored back towards them. And then with the additional visit without the family, it's allowing them to help process it and reflecting it back into their own emotions and their own development.
You've got it exactly, Christine. And also there are many activities which I've written which allow children to actually have practice reflecting on how they feel about things.
Uh-huh.
And sharing it out loud. We use a lot of art activities. And one of the most touching ones is to share a time that you were able to help a sad person.
Uh-huh.
And children really have to have self-empathy first before they can be empathic to others. And very often,
uh-huh,
we're hard on ourselves, you know, and children are very hard on themselves. So it is important. You can't love yourself unless you understand yourself.
Sure.
And in order to understand how you feel, you really do need to have opportunities to discuss it, to reflect, and then to talk about it. So to be completely emotionally literate, you have to be able to be fluent in talking about how you feel. And I can tell you that will change the trajectory of relationships over the lifespan, because without this empathy, you can't have a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't have a good friend, you're at risk of being isolated and alienated.
Right.
If you're isolated and alienated, you were talking about guns and shooting them at the top of the show.
Uh-huh.
If you have been excluded because you can't connect to yourself and others, it puts you on a very dangerous trajectory for poor mental health outcomes,
mm-hmm,
for school failure, and in some cases, in the extreme cases, for receptivity to radicalization, because you will be accepted in some groups. And in Europe, they're concerned that this might go to terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that in school, through a joyful program like Roots of Empathy, you can help children connect to themselves and to one another, to find a way to understand how the other person feels and to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
That something as simple and basic and human as this can allow children to succeed in relationships and to succeed in life.
Right. So I'm thinking about, you've got a classroom, and in any normal classroom, there may be a bully. There's definitely at least one person who's being ostracized, at least to a certain extent, or thought of as being different. Can you give us an example of how this program has affected those kinds of kids?
Well, there's lots of stories, but the one you mentioned being ostracized is one story that sticks out in my mind because it was so dramatic. And it's the story of Darren, who tragically, when he was 4 years old, his mother was murdered in front of his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And this little boy was moved from one foster care situation to another. This was in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And our foster care system, I think, is in tatters, like in most countries, because there are not enough families prepared to put up with the impact of trauma on children.
Right.
Anyhow, so this little boy was in more than 10 foster care situations before he came to Roots of Empathy in a grade 7-8 class.
Uh-huh.
And he'd failed 2 years, so he was like a head higher than the other children. And because he'd really never been accepted, he put on kind of a mean exterior. He wasn't actually mean and he wasn't violent to other people, but he didn't connect with anybody and he tried to look tough and he'd shaved his head. And this is in the late 90s.
Uh-huh.
Roots of Empathy has been around a long time. And in those days, kids didn't shave their heads. And he had a ponytail at the top of his head and in the back of his head, he had a green kind of tattoo. And I don't know if it was permanent or not. But anyhow, uh-huh, he looked menacing all day.
Right.
And the one day in Roots of Empathy, the mother was explaining the temperament of her baby, because we do study the baby's temperament so the children can understand their unique temperament.
Mm-hmm.
And she was explaining that her baby wasn't a cuddly kind of baby, and she was her first baby, and she always thought she was going to have a cuddly baby and
dress
the baby up. And anyhow, so she explained that her baby wouldn't snuggle into her when she put the baby in the carry and the snuggly, you know?
Uh-huh. The one that you wear, like wearing the baby.
Yes, the one you wear. I don't know what they're calling it now.
Yes, that snuggly is one of the brands, yes.
Okay, so in the snuggly, that the baby would only face outward. Baby was interested in seeing what was going on, not in snuggling like mommy would have preferred.
I had one of those. One of my kids was a cuddle, and the other was, I want to see what's going on. Yes, so I know.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's all to say we're unique, and that's okay.
You
don't get the baby you ordered necessarily.
Yes.
Anyway, at least you got two. So the bell went, and these kids started putting on backpacks. They were going for lunch, and there was lots of noise.
Uh-huh.
And the mother said, would anybody like to try on the snuggly? And our hero put up his hand. And kids were surprised, but they were busy and, you know, getting on. And he came over.
This is a tough guy. The tough guy with the shaved head and the tattoo. Wanted to put the carrier on.
Whose mother was murdered in front of his eyes at four, put up his hand. He wants to try on the snuggly. So he gets the snuggly on, and the Roots of Empathy instructor said to him, would you like to put the baby in the snuggly?
Mm.
Now, the mother looked slightly surprised, right?
Uh-huh, right.
Anyhow, he said yes, and ever so gently, he took the baby, and, you know, he put the baby in chest to chest. Just having heard, the baby won't do this.
Right.
And that baby molded to him, and the mother was aghast, right, because the baby wouldn't do it. And, you know, it says a whole lot about the wisdom of babies, that they find vulnerability, that they're responsive to vulnerability. So here our hero goes off into the corner with the baby, and he puts his arms around the baby in the snuggly and starts doing a seasick rock. You know, the moms go foot to foot because he'd seen the mother do it.
Right.
So the mother never broke glance, right, making sure, and the room was noisy and all, and anyhow, the young fellow came back with the baby in the snuggly after a few minutes, and he took the baby out very gently, and he gave the baby back to the mother. And as he was doing this, he said to the Roots of Empathy instructor, do you think that if no one has ever loved you, that you could still be a good father?
Wow.
And there was, as if you had dropped a bomb between the mother and the Roots of Empathy instructor and this young boy, because the wisdom and the depth of reflection that he had thought he would never bring a child into this painful world that he lived in.
Mm-hmm.
But through his year in Roots of Empathy, he believed there was a bit of hope that he could love. So it's never, ever too late. We should never, ever give up. No matter what trauma a person has been through, whether they're 12 or 24 or 48 or 84, it doesn't matter. There is the kindling of empathy in every spirit.
What an inspirational story. Stay tuned for more with Mary Gordon and the Roots of Empathy.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Tune in to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here in KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking to Mary Gordon, who is the creator of Roots of Empathy, and she has a wonderful book out called Roots of Empathy, Changing the World Child by Child. It is a program that is in every province of Canada, in New Zealand, the United States, the Isle of Man, the Republic of Ireland, Northern Ireland, England, Wales, Scotland, and Germany. And what an inspirational program it is, Mary.
So, well, thanks, Christine.
You know, I'm fascinated by the stories of what unfolds within this program, but that's sort of the qualitative part of it. What does the quantitative evaluation say about this program?
Well, there's a lot of quantitative evaluation because, you know, it sounds a bit mushy. A baby, you know, how cute is that? It's seriously cute, though. So
yes.
There have been randomized longitudinal studies and with pre and post measures and control groups. So really what that is saying is the most rigorous possible kind of scientific university peer-reviewed published research. And the most recent one was out of Northern Ireland, Queen's University, Belfast, where they looked at 8-year-old children and those who have had Roots of Empathy and those who have not. Now, I have to tell you, Roots of Empathy is right across Northern Ireland and right across every, it's in every fifth school in Northern Ireland, sort of by structure.
That's
and,
great.
Of course, the Republic of Ireland as well. So the trouble is, in that country, there is a history of generational sectarian violence, the Catholics against the Protestants.
There's history
of the Troubles and, you know, everything looks dim dandy on the surface, but everyone is aware you scratch the surface and there's resentment and there's hatred.
Right.
So how do you get rid of all of that? And they wanted to look at 8-year-old children in Roots of Empathy to see if they had the capacity to understand the other, they could reduce their aggression and make their behavior more inclusive and behave in a more what they call pro-social way, meaning more caring, more sharing, more including, more kindness.
Right.
So, sure enough, they did this randomized longitudinal study and found that, indeed, it mirrored all the other research that has happened on roots of empathy, that the children were less aggressive, were more social, were more caring, were more kind, and that it lasted over time. And most programs that you do that are supposed to be building social and emotional competence are teacher-led. The poor teacher has to do the program. It's not a gift like Roots of Empathy is.
Mm-hmm.
That they work while the teacher is there working on the program.
Mm-hmm.
But when the children go home and there's no structure and there's no one reminding them what were the three rules and what are you supposed to do and what do you do when, they dissolve. And the thing about Roots of Empathy, the reason it works without any follow-up over time, is that the children change inside. They change how they think. And what the neuroscientists who study this program, they say the program is biologically embedded, meaning the experience is not just a cognitive one like most school programs are.
Sure.
It also has an emotional impact. And when you have cognition and emotion working together, you have what educators call deep learning.
Uh-huh.
And that deep learning is transformative. It changes the brain so that the little children don't suddenly forget how to ride a bicycle just because they don't have bicycle instruction every year.
Right.
So Roots of Empathy is considered to be transformative in the experience of a child. So the research, we have that. That's the most recent one. We've grown to a few other places since I guess since that report you have, we are in our fourth year in Switzerland, and they did a very big study in Switzerland, and they had exactly the same outcome, increase in empathy, decrease in aggression, decrease in violence of all kinds. And we're in Costa Rica, so that's the intro into the Spanish-speaking world, and they're looking to do research there. And we've had two Scottish studies since I last spoke with you, and both of those studies have found the same thing, that aggression comes down and social emotional understanding comes up. So I'm here in Vancouver where they did the very first study in 2000, and they are still finding the same results. It doesn't matter if you're on one of three continents, children are children are children. And although the landscape of childhood has changed and the conditions of childhood by country are different, the essence of being a child, the emotional life of the child, is universal.
Right, right. This is so incredibly inspirational. So I think about how, if this, first of all, as a former research statistician, before I was, you know, went into sort of alternative healing and self-empowerment sorts of things, I was a research statistician. So what you described in terms of these studies is the gold standard. And the fact that it's longitudinal makes it particularly important. It's like that. Not only does change occur, but the change lasts. So what are the implications for those kids who've been in this program and you're seeing this significant change? What's the implication for when they grow up and become parents?
Well, you know, we don't have any, and I very much think we have to have quantitative evaluation. Let's count the numbers here. Stories are grand, but also let's count the numbers.
Yes.
So we don't have follow-up to that level, but we've got massive stories of when people grow up to be parents, and I can, so it's qualitative, but I can tell you one story that really tickled my fancy. It was last June, and it was in Toronto. And we had our baby celebration, just like you have in wherever you are. And this young mom came up to me with her little baby. And she said, "I want to thank you." And I said, "Oh, no, I want to thank you." She said, "No," I was thanking her for volunteering to be a Roots of Empathy mom, right?
Right.
And she said,
I want to thank you because my partner had Roots of Empathy in grade 4. And I said, well, so did it make any difference? She said, absolutely. She said he blew her mind because when the baby's fists were closed in the early months, he explained to her what that meant. She said he remembered milestones, and she said the thing that really impressed her was he understood that a little baby is a person with feelings.
Oh,
and that
that's great.
Even though they can't talk, they try to communicate. And he remembered how babies communicate and that, you know, it's their body language. He knew how to read his baby's body language.
That is amazing.
And, I mean, it really was quite sweet. And he was so bashful, he didn't want to come over. But anyway, I did eventually go over and meet him. And I said, do you remember your baby's name? And he's the dad was, I don't know, 21 or 22, was the young dad. He did remember the baby's name.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
When you're in grade 4, you're 9 years old.
Yes. So it made a huge impression, a lasting, not only impression, but it altered his future behavior.
It really did, and no one made him test it on that.
Uh-huh.
There's no tests. I mean, the way we teach in Roots of Empathy, I call our process experiential questioning.
Uh-huh.
We don't ever embarrass a child. We don't ask a question that has a specific answer. Many of the questions we ask, there's no answer to them. It's about thinking.
Uh-huh.
So that all of the questions that come up are about experiences children have had or what they're seeing. Like, what do you think and can you imagine and can you tell us about a time and what would be a perfect, you know? So the children are completely pulling on the well of their own experiences,
right, right.
And the richness of the Roots of Empathy playing out in front of their eyes on a green blanket. So there's no fear of criticism also because we come from a perspective of intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And in life,
In
children's life, everything is about being first and fastest and smartest and all of those things. And in Roots of Empathy, it's about being true to yourself.
Wow.
It's about being receptive to others. It's not about impressing others. It's about saying something, contributing in a class, not to show you're the smartest, but only when you have something worthwhile to share. And when you don't reward children with praise, and people think it's a funny thing to be saying, but praise is very controlling in a group situation, not in the home,
yes.
But in a group situation, you basically are telling the children, this is what I want to hear from you, and if you're not going to have a smart answer like this, don't bother contributing.
So you avoid doing that?
Yeah. In Roots of Empathy classrooms, every child contributes because they know they're not going to be judged for their contribution.
That's
fabulous.
We're going
to say thank you.
So we've got to go to another quick break, but stay tuned for more of this inspirational program.
Join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com.
or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Best-selling author, spiritual life, and business coach Joe Nunziata brings his higher energy and no-nonsense style to people who are ready to make powerful changes now. Wake up, step up, power up with a shot of Joe. Join Joe the second and fourth Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern for 30 minutes of high energy, no nonsense, and powerful tools to make powerful changes. Visit joenunz.com. That's joenunz.com.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
Well, it's not far down to paradise, at least it's not for me. If the wind is right, you can sail away.
Welcome back. I am so pleased to have Mary Gordon with us. Mary, what you've made into your life's work feels so incredibly important, and I want our listeners who aren't fortunate enough to have this program in their schools, and even those who do, know how they can get more information about your program.
Yes, we are, Christine, we are open to the world. We can't go everywhere all at once. We're currently in 12 countries, but if people go to our website, it's www.rootsofempathy.org.
Uh-huh.
There is an, you know, we have a drop-down for all the countries. We definitely have a donate button.
Okay.
Draw to your attention.
So, yes, I mean, how is this funded? Is it just all through donations?
We're a charity, and it's different everywhere. We are funded by a combination of governments, of corporations, of foundations, and generous individuals.
Fabulous.
And, you know, it depends on how long you're in a place. Typically, when you're in a country and you've got about 3 years of research evidence, very often governments will come in and help.
Uh-huh.
So that I never want to be completely dependent on governments.
Sure.
I like to ensure the survival and of the organization in each country by having various people come in behind it. So foundations understand us because we're evidence-based and they believe in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Schools and school districts and ministries or departments of education understand us because they care about, they realize children's emotional lives have everything to do with their learning,
mm-hmm.
and with their mental health. We're funded by health more often than education,
right.
because the emotional life of a child has everything to do with their physiological health going down the road. And you know, yes, absolutely. There's huge research to show that how a child feels and the impact of trauma and adversity in their early lives has a biological impact, which in, you know, major organs are affected, as well as
addiction behavior, and as well as propensity for violence or being a victim of domestic violence, or all of the risk factors of humanity are reflected from the experiences of childhood. And what we're trying to do is bolster the experiences in a universal level, not targeting children who are already in trouble, but taking on by classroom. How can we change outcomes for children classroom by classroom?
Uh-huh.
So, quite honestly, our probably most appreciated funding is from individuals who go to our website and donate.
Yes, and again, the website is rootsofempathy.org.
Yeah. And the thing is, people can make a note where they want it to go, but more importantly, they can leave a message to us for getting information about their country. And, you know, we had a very big story from BBC in London. And when BBC in London said they wanted to do a show on us, I said, grand, we're in England. You can do it there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, we want to come to your center of excellence where you started it. And they did. So they came to Toronto. And that show that they did, it's a four-minute clip. It's on, it's Hack. It's BBC World Hack.
Uh-huh.
It has now had 15,700,000 views.
Fabulous.
So it's incredible. There is a lot of interest. And we're getting requests at the rate of 35 a day. And I want to tell you, we respect every single request. And any folks who want information from your show, just be patient with us.
Uh-huh.
We will get back to every single person. We've got an army on this because we so value, you know, we go to a place because people understand what we do and they ask genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't go unless they're able to fund it. We have to look at sustainability. But and just to share, we're not going to the developing world right now. We're mm-hmm. going to the developed world, and that's strategic also.
Uh-huh.
We want the children in the developed world to grow up and take care of the developing world.
Mm-hmm.
So uh-huh. there are others who will go and do the basic work of providing food and shelter and education in the developing world. We're working on the development of empathy in the third, in the developed world.
Yeah, and I know also that in some areas, such as in Vancouver, as you're mentioning on the break, you're working with refugees and people who've had extreme trauma. And unfortunately, the time has flown by. We don't have an opportunity to talk fully about that. But, you know, considering the state of our world, consider the state of bullying in schools and violence and the results of you know, violence that has affected children around the world, in say a minute or less, Mary, what's your vision for our future?
Well, in spite of everything you said, Christine, which I agree with, I have an extremely optimistic view of our future. And this is not a political view. I spend a lot of my time in classrooms around the world. And what I experience in classroom is that children are the same little people they have always been. They have pure hearts and they have incredible potential for kindness, for the ability to include others, the ability to see difference. Like the Syrian refugees you mentioned, we work in Germany, and there's a massive influx of Syrian refugees there. We're going to work in Rotterdam, where they're overwhelmed with Syrian refugees who are different, just to take as an example.
Uh-huh.
So you have a rise in populism, you have a rise in racism, you have a rise in terrorism. We can kneecap all of that, to use a violent phrase. We can have an impact on all of that by helping this generation of children understand that under the sun, every human being is equal because we are the same. Mm-hmm. We share the same feelings. If we can get that recognition that every child has a sense of their own personal value and worth, that they feel that they are value added in this world, we will not have a world of resentful people who want to get even through violence, who feel that they have been excluded, and because of that exclusion, they're going to harm others.
Uh-huh.
So I feel that in the children of this generation, we can absolutely change the world.
This is so inspirational. Mary Gordon, Roots of Empathy, Changing the World Child by Child. Mary, thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Christine.
And thank you for joining us. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.